You're listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast. I'm Sarah Marshall.
I'm Laura Amico. I'm editor of Homicide Watch DC. What happened was I was looking through my analytics one afternoon and I saw a name pop up that I didn't recognize in my search referral traffic. I do deep beat reporting, so I pretty much know everything that's going on my beat, more or less. So when a name comes up that I don't recognize, it's either an odd search or it's something that I don't know. So I took that name to Facebook, to Twitter, ran some searches on it, and found that it was a crime that hadn't been reported yet by the police. And that's really the nuts and bolts of it, is just paying attention to the search terms that people are using to come into my site, and then flipping those back around onto Google, onto Facebook, onto Twitter.
Speaking to me via Skype, Laura Amico told me how she came to set up the site.
Homicide Watch DC launched at the end of September of 2010 as a WordPress site. I was an out-of-work crime reporter from California. My husband's job moved here to DC. And I was interested in following the homicides that were happening in my neighborhood. I figured I had certain skills as a reporter and that I could put those to work finding out what I wanted to know about the neighborhood I was living in. So we started as a WordPress site and very quickly gained more following than we ever anticipated. The goal was to cover every homicide in DC. We relaunched in August of 2011 on custom software that Chris built. It's a mashup of Django and WordPress. So that allows us to run a lot of database search queries, build our maps, victim pages, suspect pages. We have a page for every victim and every suspect from every homicide in DC since our launch date.
So would looking at search terms work for other beats, or is it just good for working out when murders have taken place? Laura Amico and her husband Chris think the idea could work for other areas.
Well, Chris and I are very interested in trying the method on other beats. We're looking for specific beat sites that we could perhaps try this out on and work with them on. What it takes right now is a lot of reporter effort. It takes knowing the beat inside and out so that when those search terms do come up, you know what's unusual so that you can flip that around. And then, of course, it takes the work of putting it into the various search engines and websites that you use and knowing what sorts of searches to use to find the results. For example, you know, if I have a search for John Smith, I might search RIP Johnny or Johnny killed, something like that. You know, using the name and the search term that people are coming in on creatively to find other ways that people are talking about the same thing.
And from a very small news organization to much larger ones.
My name is Tony Hale and I'm the CEO of Chartbeat. So Chartbeat is the kind of principal real-time analytics service used by almost every major publisher on the web today. So it's everyone from the New York Times and Fox News through to Al Jazeera and Le Monde in 37 countries across the world.
So why are real-time analytics so important?
Real-time is about trying to understand what's happening right now. Where are we resonating with our audience? Where are we not? Where is something surprising us that we can be responsive to? It's no longer the case that journalists have this, you know, in the morning, we're going to have a morning meeting. We're going to say, these are the 10 things that we're going to cover in this order with this priority. And then we're not going to worry about data anymore. We're not going to worry what our audience thinks. We're just going to go with our best bet. You know, that kind of prediction is starting to become less and less relevant as you start to see people being more responsive to what's working and what's not. So, I mean, you talked about search. And the classic example of this was during the assassination attempt in Arizona of Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffen. It was a huge, huge story. And Fox News was very much focusing on the assassin, you know, and his background, you know, the crazy guy that had done this assassination. And all the search terms coming up at that point in time were all about the family. It was her family, her husband, much, much more interested in the kind of that personal side of things. So what you had was, it was the same story, but there was an opportunity for them to adapt it to be much closer to what the audience was actually interested in. And so they changed it, and they saw a massive bump as a result. It was much, much more engaging for their users because it was more closely resonating with what they were actually interested in.
So that's search. I asked Tony Hale, who spoke to me from Chartbeat's base in New York, whether real-time analytics were useful during a big news story such as an election.
You find it not just in election coverage, but across the board, basically anything which is to do with a particular event. So when it's an election, whether it's a sports event, for example, we have the NFL draft over here in America, and understanding which are the kind of player profiles that are getting most of the attention, it's not usually the people that you think in the first place. Not after the kind of the top two or top three, the interest points that we have are often very different. So being able to adapt to that and be able to say, okay, like actually it's these five guys who are capturing attention in some way, and we should be maybe focusing more on them. And what you actually find in some ways is around these kind of live events, you see a connection between what's happening on the web and what's happening on TV and radio. So you have people like Glenn Beck, for example, who's a very popular radio host over here. He'll be using real-time data from the web to actually understand what his radio audience is interested in. And so he'll start talking about a particular subject around election night, and it'll turn out that, like, as he's talking about healthcare, he's not getting that kind of the perceived response on the web. And so he changes and starts talking about taxation instead. And so you have this incredibly responsive adaptation to whatever's working, whatever's not, as these things go by. And it's often about surprises. And if there's one thing we know about the social web in general, it's that it's far more unpredictable in terms of driving traffic than what we had before. We used to have the search web, which was, you know, a moderate amount of traffic to a huge number of pages over a sustained period of time. And we could architect for that. You know, as journalists, we didn't have to worry so much about driving traffic. That was the job of the SEO team and of the people worrying about the kind of optimization at the site level. In the social world, you got a huge amount of traffic to very few pages over a very short period of time. And so in that case, it's very much human dominated. It's about a journalist or an editor being able to see something as soon as it happens, that it's driving some traffic, being able to double down on that moment so that when that spike plateaus afterwards, it plateaus at a much higher level.
And what does Tony Hale say to those who say journalists should focus less on analytics and numbers and more on writing the types of stories that need to be told?
There's always a fear. And I remember certainly when we went into some of the more kind of august news organizations, there was a concern that it was going to be, looking at analytics was the beginning of the tyranny of the popular. We're going to write nothing but Lindsay Lohan stories, and it was going to be the end of journalism as we knew it. And that didn't turn out to be the case for many reasons. For one, very few journalists go into journalism for the money. They do it because they have a sense of principles, and they want to write about particular things in a particular way. As the managing editor of the Wall Street Journal said to me, you know, we're never going to stop writing about Afghanistan. But it's not just important that you write about it, it's also important that people read about it. So if that story on Afghanistan is hidden behind the wrong headline, or you've buried the lead in paragraph 3 and people aren't getting down to the core bit of importance, it's really important to know that, because it's not, as I said, it's not just about us writing about this stuff, it's about people reading about it. And the best way that I've heard to describe it is it's kind of like being a good parent, in that if you purely listen to your children and just do whatever they say, you're not going to be a good parent. If you ignore your children totally and just go, I'm going to go with my gut reaction and do whatever I think is right, you're probably not going to be a good parent either. It's a question of balancing your principles and your gut reaction about what you think is right with listening to and what your audience is telling you.
For more on analytics, go to journalism.co.uk. You've been listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast.